Welcome to the JT Fox Podcast Network, and you are in for a treat here today because we are going to talk about someone who is completely innovating the idea of the restaurant concept. Now, during COVID, a lot of restaurants did not survive. They went out of business. And many of you probably wondered, you probably can run a restaurant yourself, and how would you run? Because everybody thinks they can run a restaurant, but the investor is, can you? Well, today we have someone from my hometown, Montreal, Canada, who literally built a restaurant empire in Dubai as well as London, and here to give us exactly his story of being completely broke, working for somebody else, and then building a restaurant empire and getting down to the nitty-gritties of what does it take to succeed, not just in a restaurant, but any business. Please welcome to the JT Fox Podcast Network, Mr. Joey Gazelle. Hey, Joey, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's 5 a.m. for me, but London time for you. But you were worth it for me to do a podcast this early, by the way.
I appreciate you.
So
Joey, you're my Montreal homeboy.
Yeah. Well, you know, you ever wonder, Joey, how everybody thinks they can run a restaurant, right? So the idea is everybody thinks that, oh, if I started a restaurant or I can run a restaurant. On a scale of 1 to 10, you know, as an entrepreneur, how hard is it to run a restaurant, a successful restaurant, and why?
Restaurant business is definitely one of the hardest businesses you can imagine because it's so intensely multidisciplinary. You have to be equally left brain and right brain at the same time. I mean, you need to know creativity and you have to have a love for cooking and for, you know, marketing and presentation and art and design. And at the same time, you need to be very strong in systems and procedures and accounting and corporate governance and in HR. And you rarely find people that are equally good at both.
So why is it what's the statistics on a restaurant? That how long do they last? Is it 3 years? Is it 5 years? And why do they fail?
Well, I would say in the bar and nightclub space, typically they have about a 2 or 3 year lifespan, typically, because you need to constantly be ideating and you need to be constantly being creative on bringing people in, and it gets a little boring. In the restaurant space, if you create something that is timeless and, you know, feels familiar, it can last 20, 30 years. Some people make the mistake of creating restaurants that feel a little bit like a fad in the moment. And, you know, they have a very strong, successful opening, but then it dies out for whatever reason, maybe mostly because, you know, the promise is not kept, the quality is not there, people are not recognized, they don't know how to loyalize their customers. But in general, if you create a restaurant that feels classic and timeless, I feel like you can definitely make it last a very, very long time.
Give us an example of a restaurant off the top of your mind where, you know, the idea is it started off well, it was very hot. We may not know the name and why did it decline? So we have an idea of what a failed concept is.
You want me to give you a specific example?
Yeah, or just maybe we may not know the name, but this is what the restaurant was about and was packed and it was on fire and then it just died.
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, many times, you know, again, being in this business, you see a lot of, for example, chefs, celebrity chefs, they write multiple cookbooks, you know, they're very famous, and they want to open their own space. So they meet an investor, the investor throws a lot of money at the project. It's not designed to evoke, let's say, the chef's personality or the chef's food or the ethos of what the chef stands for. It's over the top. It's designed, really feels like it was designed by a designer. They have a very expensive opening. They bring in, you know, the likes of the Kim Kardashians of the world and so on. They spend, I don't know, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars on this crazy opening. But in the end, it doesn't matter how much money you throw at it. It doesn't matter what kind of big bang opening you've had. If the chef does not feel, and this is the celebrity chef, if the chef does not feel like the space represents him, if he's not invested, if it doesn't feel that it's an extension of him or of his work, if the client doesn't feel that it's familiar or comfortable you know, has an identity, I would say.
Are you saying that the food is not good, or is it? Because I don't understand, right? If the food is good, like, who cares about the identity or the feeling? Are you saying that the customer really resonates that and feels that? I mean, I imagine the celebrity chef has.
Having good food is not necessarily a given, you know, or excellent food. I mean, you have to have good quality food. But I would say that, you know, there are many restaurants that have average food and succeed because they have an amazing ambiance, because of an amazing experience, because maybe the pricing is right. I mean, there's a lot of places where, you know, they hit a certain target audience and they operate on volume, let's say. So it's, first of all, you have to know what kind of restaurant you're opening. My example about the celebrity chef, his food was very much fusion based. People didn't understand it. It was something that he was playing with, something that was meant to be honest and authentic and familiar to people. But what ended up happening was every dish that came out was a twist on a dish that didn't really need to be twisted. So that is where you lose people. You lose people when you are not able to give them something that they recognize, they appreciate, they're looking for. That's where I would say he failed.
So let's go back to your, we're both from Montreal, Canada. So obviously you have a very successful restaurant. I won't give the name yet so that we can go into the story. But did you always knew that you'd like, when you were younger, like, this is what I want to do. I want to be a restaurateur. Because I was a waiter and I have no interest.
Yeah, I mean, my dad really wanted me to get into hospitality when I was young. And I said to him, hell no, I have no interest in getting into hospitality. He wanted me to go to hotel management school in Switzerland. He was looking at Cornell in Ithaca, New York. And I was just like, I had no interest in it because the idea of being working in a hotel my entire life and maybe potentially becoming a general manager really didn't make any sense to me. But then what happened was at 17, he was like, look, the money tap is being turned off. You need to go get a job. And what job are you going to get at 18 years old if it's not like a busboy in a restaurant? So I worked as a busboy in a very successful high-end restaurant in Montreal called Côte Cheval, which was really one of these very high concept spaces. I mean, it was a steakhouse, big wines, big steaks, lots of celebrity clients, you know, 400 seats on multiple floors. It was right in front of the Bell Center. So it was the Hockey Nights in Canada. It was super busy, you know, all the time. And it was an amazing school for me. And I actually, at 18, 19, 20 years old, it brought me out of my shell. I learned how to, you know, talk to people. I learned how to sell product. I learned how to guide people in a perfect experience. I learned how to be a host. I learned about, you know, networking. I learned about working within a team. I learned about being under pressure. I mean, these are things that you want to learn when you're 18, 19 years old. So I think actually being a waiter is one of the best jobs you can do when you're young.
I agree. When I was, I mean, I started off as a waiter and I always treated my section like my little business. So it kind of helped me to entrepreneurism. I had my four tables, but I also learned about the art of a lot of drama. See, at the end of the day, I had all these tips and then I would go home and put them into my green lunchbox and I would count the money every single night that I made every night from any night. And the culture of a lot of waiters is they would take those tips and then go drinking after at another bar.
Blow the money on all kinds of stuff.
They go blow the money. And so, that's why I wasn't too popular because they're like, oh, you know, you're not hanging out with us or stuff like that. But I was saving up money, which was a lot of money. It was cash money too.
Yeah, it's a lot of money to be making also when you're that young. I remember I was making $1,000 a week cash and I thought I was like the king of the world. And the funny thing is that I would take that money and I'd go blow it on really expensive dinners in other restaurants. That's what I would do. And actually, that's the irony of it all is I started to realize not only did I enjoy being in the business, but I also enjoyed going out there and observing and, you know, just taking stock of other restaurants and why it works and why it doesn't work and why I was connected and gravitated to these different places. And that kind of became my whole life. I mean, I think I spend now the majority of my life traveling, visiting restaurants. I don't go to every restaurant. I mean, I feel like certain things really attract me, but I'm able to sit down in a restaurant and I'm able to say, understand why I like it, why it works. I look around and I understand why it is that why it resonates with people. And I would say that that's kind of been the reason why I got into restaurant development And
how did that happen? So you're a busboy waiter, and then
I also did a stint in London where I worked with Soho House at the first location on Greek Street in Soho, which again was a foray into sort of the private members model and kind of.
And why there? Was there a strategic concept, or was the job that was there? Are you being strategic about where you're taking
it? There, it was just the job that was there. There was really no rhyme or reason. I was just, hey, I can make money this way. And I became a manager of a restaurant. I became the general manager of a restaurant. My big break really was in 2004 when I became the head of marketing and development for a big restaurant company. And working very closely with the owner, we were developing about, two restaurants a year at one point. And we were designing everything in-house, doing all the marketing. We were doing all the pre-openings, all the development. And I really got to see firsthand the process of really what it means to not only create a concept, but to build a company and to build a culture. And also I learned a lot of what to do and also what not to do.
So you do that. And then how do you start your own restaurant?
Well, I mean, it wasn't planned. When I turned 30, it was a little bit after 2008. So, the market after the crash was not great. In Canada, the cracks started to show. And I was saying to myself, I started mentally preparing myself for opening my own restaurant. My father got diagnosed with cancer, so I had to move to Beirut to spend really the last 6 months with him before he passed away. And while I was there, someone approached me and said, why don't you stay in Beirut? And I have this idea. I've got some money. I'm looking to open a restaurant. What would you do? And that's really how it started. People started sort of chasing me to help them develop restaurants. They were asking me what I wanted to do. I had to start thinking about what I wanted to do. So when my father passed away, I have to say that one of the ways that I dealt with his passing was I really launched myself into opening restaurants, and I opened 5 restaurants in 2.5 years in Beirut.
Wow.
And that's also not the way you do things, I have to say.
Right. And how is it like to do business in Beirut? Obviously we see what happens in the news what kind of restaurants, and
first of all, Beirut is again not what you see on the news. Beirut is an extremely vibrant, it's a vibrant city. It's got one of the most interesting design and culinary, it's one of the most interesting culinary destinations in the world. I would say it has some of the most interesting, bars and nightlife concepts people love to dine out, and they love to party. So it was great. And it was a great time in Beirut, back then in 2010, 2011, before the Syrian war. And I have to say, I had a really, really good time there when I was there. But to your point, it's a very different culture. I'd never lived there before. Even though I'm originally Lebanese, I'd never in my entire life spent any time there.
Really. What's the difference between the Canadian culture, which I know, versus the Lebanese culture?
I mean, first of all, the thing you need to understand about Lebanon is there's 18 different religions in one country. Okay. And it's quite tribal. So not everybody gets along entirely. They had an 18-year civil war. It's a beautiful country. People can agree on the way of life is amazing. But I think within work culture, it's quite segmented and quite tribal. So it's actually quite difficult for me to do business. The other thing I would say is that the city is always changing. So areas that are hot one moment literally die after about a year or two, and they literally shift the area to another area. So it's quite difficult. I think people who do business in Lebanon have a very much a survivalist mentality. If they've lived there their whole life, they know how to just pick up and start again quite quickly. And me coming from Canada, I think I probably struggled because, I was doing business plans, like 5-year projections. I was looking at 10-year projections. I wanted a stable environment. And at that time, that was not it.
And so these 5 concepts, are you owners in these concepts, and what
Correct.
Happened to them?
Correct. So at the beginning, when I was being approached, people would offer me at the beginning, they would offer me just to sort of develop the concepts for them. And then what I would do is I'd sort of hash out my ideas and kind of a deck of what I thought would work. I would help them put it together. I would help them source the chefs. I would help them do the designs. I would help them kind of really hash out what they wanted to do. But in the process, I also started to take sweat equity in the businesses instead of actually taking fees. That was my first restaurant that I did. But with time, I started to get more confident. And when those concepts started succeeding, people started offering me more percentages, or I was able to get sweat equity and a fee. I was able to get sweat equity with options to buy more equity. I started to be able to do many, many kind of things in my early restaurants. But really for me, it was just about trying things out, learning, building a resume, building a reputation, you know, starting to really kind of understand. And I was doing smaller restaurants. I mean, the first one I did was really a burger shop. It was sort of the beginning of that craze of the gourmet burger. So we had two burgers and a hot dog, but it was like the best quality burger you could have. We had a celebrity chef attached to it. It was as simple as hell, but actually it was so wildly successful that because of that, people started knocking on your door and everybody wants to do something. So it started to take life. And what I realized is that it's all a process. I mean, at the end of the day, as long as you're building a good reputation, as long as you have a strong track record, as long as you're networking, as long as you can prove your commitment and quality and so on, you know, the projects just get more interesting and bigger and better.
What did you realize did not work and what really worked? If you like break it down in Lebanon at that time, you're like, this really works. If I do this, this doesn't work.
I would say when at that time, you know, I'll give you a perfect example. I had created a steakhouse. And it was on the bay, surrounded by luxury yachts. And for every intents and purposes, it should have worked. But the problem with it was that I was designing a very high-end steakhouse in a location that had no direct access by car. You had to kind of park with the valet, and then you had to walk a bit and you know, take some stairs to arrive at the location. And what I realized did not work is having a disjointed sense of arrival. So even though it was in this magical location, and even though the view was amazing of all these luxury yachts, and even though the product was amazing and the, you know, the service was excellent and the place was beautiful, if there's no sense of arrival to match the, let's say the elevated experience that you're offering, that doesn't work. I think it all starts with the arrival.
Like the ambiance or just the ease of it, or just
coming out of your car, you know, giving your keys to a valet and walking directly into a restaurant, not having to take an elevator, not having to take stairs, not walking into a hotel lobby, not walking into a mall. The sense of arrival is probably one of the key ingredients in my mind to start your, you know, journey of a good restaurant.
Isn't that ironic though? The restaurant that I went to, and maybe we'll see Dubai, that I had to walk into a hotel lobby, not sure where I'm going. And then the door was there. So it was a little hard for me to get to Dubai to get to that restaurant. So let's get to
how did it make you feel?
Well, I didn't want to be late. So I walked, which by the only guy who walked in Dubai to the restaurant from my hotel. Yeah. I think I was a little like, where is it? Trying to like, it was the signage there wasn't as obvious.
Interesting, because my first restaurant in Dubai, actually, I opened it in a hotel garage. Literally, you had to drive into the garage to access the restaurant. And it was sandwiched between the garbage room and the delivery dock of the hotel, where all the deliveries, the fish and the meat were being delivered. And when the location was presented to me, I absolutely fell in love with it. I remember the agent that was showing it to me was kind of shy to show it to me because she couldn't see what I saw. And actually what I saw was this completely hidden, discreet entrance. And I had this feeling that when people would find it and would walk through the doors, it would create this sort of false expectation. I had a feeling that people would really connect with that sort of speakeasy-esque kind of arrival. Because to your point, at that time in Dubai, every restaurant is in a mall or in a hotel lobby, so on. But if you're able to just drive into this garage and then you're with guests and your guests say, where are you taking me? And they say, don't worry, I'm going to take you to this amazing place. And you arrive at this completely unassuming place. It's literally so industrial and feels so wrong. And you walk through those doors and then you're met with beautiful interiors and vibes and ambience. That's the kind of the attachment I wanted people to have to the place.
But isn't that a risk though? Like at the end of the day, it'd be like just kind of like the yacht place where you have to go to the stairs and it's unassuming. And you talk about the arrival in a parking lot garage with the garbage containers. Like, wasn't that a risk?
You would think it wouldn't work, but I don't know why I absolutely felt that it would, because I think I had a sense of what was going on in Dubai at the time. And what was really missing was something that felt very honest and discreet and very not flashy, you know. I feel that when you open up a restaurant that you have to access through a hotel lobby, it doesn't really feel authentic enough. And so I was really wanting to create something that felt gritty and authentic and real. And actually that opening up in that garage, I think really achieved that.
Well, let's go back. When did you decide to go to Dubai and why Dubai?
Right. So I left Beirut in 2013. I sold out of my different restaurants. I closed one of them, made a little bit of money, and I decided to go to Dubai. I grew up in Dubai. You know, my father was in Dubai. My family was in Dubai from 1975. So I went to high school there. I'd gone to primary school there. I really saw Dubai before it became this crazy.
You know, but there was nothing in 75 in Dubai. It was like a sand.
There was nothing. My father worked as station manager, KLM, and then general manager of Danata, which is the passenger handling agent at the airport. And really, if you just look at the airport in the 70s was just a one-room airport. Now it's one of the busiest transit airports in the world. Dubai, when I was going to school there, my school was out in the desert. I felt like I had to travel for an hour into the desert to get to my high school. And now it's literally in the middle of a city twice the size of Chicago. I mean, it's insane. Dubai is one of these amazing stories where an entire city has literally been built in under 20 years. And if there's one thing I would say about growing up there that I really appreciate about Dubai is that it kind of fills you with this amazing sense of limitlessness. I mean, ambition and drive. It's one of these amazing places. Did you feel that way when you came?
I think Dubai reminds me of a Miami, a bit of on steroids, right? Yeah, and Miami, so I've come to realize, and you go to Dubai for a lifestyle, but it's hard to do business in Dubai. It's like, it feels like it's not like I'm going to go in there and I'm going to meet all these people to do business with them. I'm going to meet great people. I'm going to meet great relationships. But
it's not easy to do business in Dubai. First of all, I don't think it's easy to do business anywhere, but I think you definitely have to be invested in Dubai. You have to spend time there. You have to really commit yourself, and you can't just go in there and think you're going to make a quick buck and
which is what a lot of people do.
Which is what a lot of people do, but that's what happens. People blow a lot of money. I mean, I can't tell you the amount of restaurateurs that, you know, try to open up in Dubai, the amount of celebrity chefs that have tried to open up in Dubai and have failed. It's one of the highest number of restaurants per capita in the world. I think we're now at 13,000 restaurants. And it's an insanely competitive dining market. And when I opened the first restaurant in Dubai in 2015 in that hotel garage, it was really about my feeling that I had identified a real gap in the market. And I felt so confident about it. I looked around and I saw what was happening. And I'm like, this is what's missing. This feeling is what's missing. And I went for it.
And so what was the concept? What was the first concept? And this is the parking garage one.
Correct. So I opened a restaurant called The Main, which was really meant to be an oyster bar and grill. You know, as a Montrealer, as most Montrealers, I would spend almost every summer vacationing in on the East Coast in Vermont and Maine and Massachusetts and so on. And as a kid, I remember feeling like lobster rolls and oysters and crab in the bucket and corn on the cob was just my like fondest memory of my childhood. And so I really just wanted to open up a great seafood restaurant in this garage that kind of felt like it was a fishmonger that was converted into a restaurant. So a beautiful fish market, you know, a half a dozen selections of oysters, you know, all the things that you, that I remembered fondly as a child, you know, clam chowder. And like I said, crab cakes and lobster rolls. And I love oysters. It's one of those things that I really love. So predominantly a seafood restaurant, but that also had a lot of other things that I knew would really work, you know, pasta dishes, a great grill, steaks and chops. And really what it kind of became a love letter to all of the different experiences that I had at all these different restaurants around the world in the early part of my career. That's what was the first one. And it was so successful that we ended up opening up three of them in Dubai and now London. And last summer was our first season. We had one in Ibiza as well.
So let's go over the concept. So explain to people exactly what the concept, because they're not all the same. There's the called the main, but there's different themes of the main, correct? Sure.
So, I mean, look, what I really wanted to do was I wanted to create a kind of very classic American steakhouse at the core, you know, seafood, steak. It's really a grill at the end of the day. So I wanted something that felt very familiar. I wanted something that felt that there were food that you really wanted to eat. I wanted it to feel like a place you could come to multiple times a week that was kind of multi-occasional. You could dress it up and dress it down. You could come on a Monday night for a simple date night with your wife, or you could come with your business partners and impress and have seafood towers and a tomahawk steak on the weekend. So I wanted something that really felt like a community space. And the first one we'd open was in a very densely populated area in Dubai that really had kind of like been largely unexplored before. But I understood that there was a really, really interesting catchment of high income couples that were looking for a place where they could go either to hang out at the bar or to have a dinner or somewhere that became kind of an institution, I would say. So that's what it is. It's an American grill. I call it a brasserie. And at the time, I felt that that market sector of a brasserie, which is kind of, I would say, premium casual middle market, which was offering great value, great experience, great quality food, but a kind of an affordable price, was completely missing. And what we ended up becoming by opening up three locations around the city was we kind of became the brasserie company of the city.
So the concept that I went to the restaurant, the food was phenomenal. And there's this expectation in Dubai of like, how do you get the best food? Is it flown in from all over the world? And you were kind of shocked me about where the food actually comes from and how fresh it was.
Yeah. I mean, look, the thing about Dubai is, yes, there's a lot of things that are imported, specifically in terms of steak and in terms of seafood. Definitely our oysters are imported. We have one great guy called Remy Murray, who is the first to create an oyster farm in the UAE called Dibba Oysters. So we do also have a local oyster. But the thing that is very surprising that most people would not know is there's over 4,000 farms in the UAE. I mean, people think it's a desert, but actually they grow everything. You have strawberries, you have every type of lettuce and vegetable you can imagine. So actually our menu is 90% the vegetables are actually grown locally.
Wow. And then you decide to foray into the London market and open a time during COVID, one of your biggest now restaurant, almost one of your most famous in London, very famous. Celebrities go there. You were just there yesterday telling me before the call, all the celebrities and all that. So you were to start the main concept into London. What happened? And tell us about what the story, which is a remarkable during COVID.
Yeah. So look, we had an enormous amount of success with the main in Dubai. We had three locations. And, I was discussing with my partners in about 2018. I said, look, guys, if we want to be taken seriously in this space, we need to open up an international location. And London made the most sense because, like I said, I mean, I lived there, I've worked there. It's very much a suburb of Dubai almost. I mean, I think there's an amazing kind of interchange between London and Dubai. And I started the process of looking at what kind of main would work in London. So I spent about 2 years looking at different locations, dining out at almost every possible restaurant you can imagine in the city to kind of identify what the gap in the market is. And interestingly, I'd even hired a company to do kind of a bit of a market study with focus groups. And we invested a lot of time and energy and money into the exercise because I didn't want anyone to, I also didn't want, I wanted to be able to put my hand on my heart and say, I really did my homework. And interestingly, we had decided on a small location in the city at the time, the city being the banking sector, Liverpool Street. And what ended up happening was, we paid the deposit on the rent, we did all the designs, we invested a lot of money, and then COVID happened, and we ended up not going ahead with that site and walked away
How
from
much were you into by then?
about £500,000.
Just like that. Now, are you feeling the pressure? Because that's a lot of money, you know.
I mean, I was feeling the pressure to go back to, my investors and say, we're just walking away from this kind of sunken cost and we're not even going to do anything. And it's very interesting. I'd come to London in October 2020 in full lockdown. And the landlord from this location in the city was calling me like, are you going to start construction? Because they were allowing construction to happen at that time. And I'm just saying to her, do you realize that the world has fallen off a cliff and there's a global pathogen out there and the city is completely unworkable right now? And I had to make the very hard decision of walking away from that site. But interestingly, my agent at the time, my real estate agent calls me up. He said, look, there's this other site in Mayfair that is available. Would you like to look at it? I said, it's Mayfair. It's, much more expensive. It was a much larger space. The investment was probably four times more than what we had planned to do in the city. I said, I'll look at it and I guess I'll talk to the guys and see what kind of deal we can arrive at. But I thought it was a total long shot. I didn't really think that that would be a viable option. Also, I mean, again, we're talking October 2020. I mean, the world has gone dark. It was not the time to be opening a restaurant. I think most
Which,
restaurants
let
were.
me step back. Your Dubai restaurant, October 2020, Dubai had somewhat opened up. Is there restrictions on restaurant? How well those restaurants are doing in October 2020?
Honestly, I mean, knock on wood, I consider myself very lucky because Dubai really knew what they were doing. They went immediately into lockdown for only 2 months. And then when they opened with restrictions, with capacity limitations. They were kind of riding the waves of the infections. And there was a lot of rules and systems in place, and everybody participated. I mean, they all understood that what they were doing was for the benefit of everyone to reopen and to maintain everyone's livelihood. Because let's be honest, a lot of people lost their shirts. And I feel very lucky that we were able to reopen in June. I opened in June with a new restaurant, the one that you came to in Business Bay.
Oh, wow.
And actually, we still ended up, again, I've considered myself very blessed and lucky. We ended up even closing with a profit that year. And that's all really all down to, I have to say, to the government and their understanding of the situation. And it was really the main reason why we were able to then do the London project and open up coming out of London lockdown in October 2021.
And you spent a lot of money on this. It described us this location, which is now one of the biggest hotspots in London.
Right. So the main Mayfair is located on Hanover Square, in Mayfair. Mayfair is one of these, you know, I think on the Monopoly board, it's the most expensive area. It is literally the most expensive real estate in the world. It's where you could find, you know, the best restaurants, the highest number of Michelin star restaurants, private members clubs, and so on. And where we're located is really the original square of Mayfair, and was very much under development for 10 years. So we took this location that was a Georgian townhouse, an 18th century Georgian townhouse that built in 1720, grade two listed, beautiful features inside. It had never been a restaurant before. And Great Portland Estates, the landlord, and I were in talks for a very long time, for about, you know, 3 to 6 months, about what kind of restaurant would work within this kind of residential building almost. It's three floors, five rooms. It seats about 400 people, and each room is wildly different, because you're essentially building a restaurant in what used to be a home, in a Georgian home. So it was an amazing project to do. It's the fastest project I've ever done. I first saw the location in October 2020. With all the negotiations and the back and forth, we signed the lease in January 2021. With all the permitting and the designs, I was able to start construction in April 2021, and I opened in October 2021. So 1 year end to end.
And you spent how many pounds on to just the restaurant itself?
Over 12 million pounds. Yeah.
Are you feeling the pressure at that point of like, that's a lot of money? And how did you know that was going to work in a hyper-competitive market where there's so many different types of these restaurants in and around there?
Well, the truth is that when I started to feel that this project was going to happen, I went out to a lot of people that I trust in Dubai, whose opinions I value, and I asked them. I said to them, hypothetically, I mean, I have this location. It's a dream location. It's a dream scenario. This doesn't happen every day. It's just by some kind of divine intervention that this thing is kind of landed in our lap. Would you think I was crazy if I jumped on this? And every single person I spoke to said no, said go for it, because the world will reopen. There'll be a huge amount of pent-up demand. And if you open up in the right way, you'll come out being that hot story when people have been locked in for a year or so.
What's the right way?
Well, I would say, obviously, you have to be prepared. You know, you have to open up with the right kind of narrative. You need to open up with a big bang. You need to do a series of openings almost. It's not just one opening. I think it's about, in London, really opening in London, in a location like that, amongst that kind of competition and that caliber, I would say, of restaurants, you need to come out of the gates swinging. I mean, you know, at that point, you're in so deep. It's really just about creating the maximum noise, the maximum value, the maximum experience that you can, because, you know, for all intents and purposes, you're a new kid on the block. And I would say that would be the right way. So I opened up with a lot of different kinds of events. I opened up with, you know, two PR agencies that I was working with at the time, to bring in almost two complete different kind of clients. We opened up with, you know, a lot of reviews, a lot of invitees. I opened up in a kind of a staggered approach. So I didn't open up the whole space in one shot. I went room by room. And really, we opened up with the maximum kind of virality, I would say. So, you know, it's a space, one of the rooms in the building does live jazz every single night in burlesque performances. So I understood that the beauty of that room and that dramatic chandelier and these burlesque performances and this cabaret feeling and this kind of, I would say, aesthetic or ambiance of the 1920s would become very Instagrammable and would become kind of a very hot ticket in town. And I was right that it did become. And it also cemented itself as kind of the go-to destination whenever you're looking for a good night out, for good value, whenever you're coming into town or you have friends in town that you want to impress. Our place is that kind of place.
And then how did you get to Ibiza?
Ibiza actually was a funny story. So I've always been very interested by, I mean, I've been going to Ibiza for 20, 25 years. And I've always been interested with sort of summer seasonal destinations. And the reason for that is because traditionally in a restaurant, especially in Dubai, for example, July and August, most of our clients are in Ibiza, they're in Mykonos, they're in, you know, Sardinia, they're in Saint-Tropez. And you got to go where your regulars are. And I knew that our regulars, the majority of them were in Ibiza. So opening in Ibiza has always been kind of an interesting model for me. And again, serendipitously, somebody had messaged me in March last year and said, look, there's a location that's available. It used to be a restaurant about 4 years ago. It's already fully kitted up. Would you like to come and see it? Because, you know, nobody knows about it yet. So I flew down literally the next day. I looked around. I said, this is totally workable. My only priority was being able to open it for that season, because, you know, when you invest that kind of money with furniture and everything, you want to hit the summer. And we were able to open up at the end of June, so kind of halfway through the summer. And yeah, it was another really fast project that came together. But, you know, my instincts were correct. Most of our clients from Dubai and from London are in Ibiza in the summer. So it's really, I think what gives me the most amount of pleasure and what makes the most sense is when you build a brand that people follow, you know, and that they trust. The nicest thing is to walk around your restaurants in every city and just see faces that you see from your restaurants in other cities. I mean, that's really that's the biggest compliment anyone could ever give.
How is it this idea of getting people to come to a restaurant more than once a week, right? I mean, are you giving them a discount? Do they have priorities? Do they just call in and say, I want my table? Because that's rare, right? I mean,
that's a good question, and it's a long answer. So the first part I would say is about recognition. People want to feel recognized. So we have a very, very strong system in place where we profile our guests. We know where they like to sit, who do they like to be served by, what's their favorite bottle of wine, you know, what's the name of their wife, what's the name of their kids, and really understanding what are their preferences, I would say. You know, there's this amazing book by Danny Myers called Setting the Table. It's really a Bible in the restaurant business. If anyone's interested in opening a restaurant, they should read that book. And in that book, he talks about something called connecting the dots. And dots are these small pieces of information that you can collect from your guests to create a profile about them, because recognition of their preferences, of their likes, their dislikes, is the number one way to loyalize anybody. You know, when people feel they're appreciated, they're recognized, and so on. The second thing I would say is value. Value is one of these things that when you're giving a sense of value, people feel like they're getting bang for their buck. They feel like, you know, they feel like, you know, they're not being ripped off. I think is the number one way you could create an experience that people want to come back for. It's reliable, it's dependable, you know what you're getting, and you know that you're always going to have good value for your money. Number three, I would say it's really about experience. I mean, experience, ambiance, warmth, friendliness, a sense of familiarity, a sense of authenticity, again, is what resonates with people. And I would say also a little bit of celebration. You got to throw in a dash of celebration in there so that people feel that it's the place where they come to celebrate birthdays, anniversaries, even just celebrating that you know survived a week at work. I mean, a place where people feel like they can let off some steam. I think those are four, probably, I could probably think of more, but these are four key ingredients, I would say, that go into getting people to come back to your restaurant.
Two more questions. The concept of Chef Gordon Ramsay or the Salt Bay, right? Celebrity driven. The Salt Bay is pretty much everywhere, 50 million Instagram followers because he does the little sprinkled sauce, which is amazing. I mean, everyone takes pictures. It's almost like invented a celebrity. I mean, who'd have thought someone serving you, you know, food and go, wow, you know what I mean? It just really remarkable if you take a look at it. And then you have Chef Gordon Ramsay, who was everywhere, TV and all that. And then his restaurants weren't doing as well and then somehow made it come back. And now there seems to be a lot more restaurants everywhere. So as an outsider, how do you evaluate both of these entrepreneurs per se, and what makes them special?
I mean, they're both trailblazers, to be honest with you. I mean, I think the chef from Nusret changed the game. I mean, I think he was the first Instagram viral chef, you know, and his character, his costume, his, you know, his thing with the salt, it really became instantly recognizable at a time when nobody had really capitalized on this new medium of Instagram. And I would say, you know, he really understood the game. And he really rode that wave. Now, whether, you know, that's going to go on for longer, or whether, you know, that is something that people will always be interested in, I don't know. That remains to be seen. But I think he was really very smart about his execution. He understood the amazing potential of Instagram, and he understood this new kind of world that we were living in, which was the idea that people wanted to go and catch a glimpse of this guy, this character, this kind of like crazy butcher guy. Gordon Ramsay is a media empire. You know, he is, I mean, I don't know how many books and TV shows and that he's done, but I think probably what he has realized is it's a lot more difficult to manage a restaurant or to create a restaurant than it is to, you know, be on TV and to be this kind of TV personality. I mean, having restaurants as a business, if you're not present or you don't have a team that you trust that is present, it's very difficult.
Yeah, which brings me to my last questions. After opening up many restaurants, some have failed earlier on, and obviously now you're riding the streak of success and fire and built a great brand with the Main. What do you think the key to success is? If you can give us a very sort of elaborate answer, not, you know, work hard and be persistent. We all know that. But if you break down, what do you break the essence of success?
Wow, it's a really good question. I think the essence of success is about having your finger on the pulse of what is happening and being able to adapt. I think really adaptability is one of the key things. I mean, yes, you need to have a formula. The formula needs to work. You need to understand, you know, you need to always keep the main thing, you know, have these pillars that are kind of the foundations of your business. But at the same time, as a sort of a top layer, you always need to be adapting. You need to be kind of moving a little bit and with the crowds, with the changing tastes, changing perceptions. I would say adaptability is one of the key recipes to success.
Well, it's two Montreal guys, two great success stories, but more importantly, everybody wants to be a restaurant guy. Or has the idea they think they'd be a good restaurant guy, but like any other business, it's not easy, but the fundamentals are the same. I think the attention to details, the wow experience, looking at what your competition is doing, constantly re-innovating. And more importantly, is the word wow, right? I mean, if people don't come back and don't tell others unless they're wowed.
100%. The Main, every single Main that you'll go to doesn't look the same as the other. There's similarities, there's foundations that you can reckon, you know, when you're at a Main. But actually, that's what I meant by adaptability also, is that they all are designed to suit the neighborhood that they're in. They're designed to really kind of have a sense of place. And that's kind of very important also.
Well, the irony is, I said to you, I was in Sydney, Australia, inside a hotel. And I went to a restaurant, which was also a brasserie, and it had a little bit of the same feel as yours, but the food just wasn't good. And it was like one of those menus where you looked at it and I didn't know what anything was, you know, carrot puree with butterscotch. And I'm like, the fuck, I just want a steak. And then, you know, it was very disappointed. Like you look at the menu and they're like, there's nothing to eat. Even the appetizers of your two slices of tomatoes with olive oil, the presentation and the freshness. And that was really good. I had two of those.
Simplicity, honesty, and I would say, honestly, just giving food that people want to eat, but doing it right, you know, even if it's a classic, do it right. And if you're going to add a twist, make it so faint that it adds value. It doesn't take away value.
Well, I would recommend everyone to go visit any of those restaurants, but more importantly, also maybe take a look at the Instagram, take a look at the pictures so you can truly understand. And this is not just about owning a restaurant business. You know, conceptual implementation is taking the ideas that Joey has brought up in the restaurant, how does it apply into your business, into your sphere, into your experience with your customers? It's not just saying, well, I'm not in the restaurant. I think that's a mistake. I think you've taken a lot of things from other places and implemented into your restaurant. Is that correct? What do you think is the biggest thing, not part of the restaurant, that you've brought into your restaurant?
I mean, like I said, I mean, I've been traveling and dining, and I will always observe, you know, why it works and why it evokes in me a feeling. A good feeling, why I feel comfortable, or why I feel, you know, glamorous, or why I feel, you know, warm, why I feel recognized. I mean, I analyze why it works, what they're doing to make me feel that way. And I take those learnings and I try to adapt it into our own business. And I think that is the best thing you could do, is be a great observer.
I'm going to ask you a question just out of curiosity. If you had the choice right now to your next location, is it in France? Is it in Singapore? Or is it in Australia? Why? Pick the country and order all three of them, and why?
It wouldn't be any of those places. What we built in London is really a one of a kind.
Why not Paris? Just out of curiosity, right? They're just...
Labor laws, complicated market. It's dominated very much by one restaurant group over there who's doing a great job. And it's not as interesting as...
Really?
Not the right place for what we've built.
What about Singapore?
Singapore is more interesting. I think Singapore...
Because I think they're lacking that. It's very brand name-ish, but it's lacking that.
So, I mean, look, what we've ended up with in this journey that has now been 8 years is I've kind of ended up with three different types of mains, three verticals of mains. I have the typical premium casual vertical, which is the one that you came and dined at, which is really could go into any sort of, I'd say, B city with a 1.5 to 2.5 million population, which is your kind of classic, dependable, reliable, comfortable brasserie experience, where you don't mind spending 20% more because you know you're getting great value and experience and ambiance. The Mayfair model is not that. The Mayfair model is much more about entertainment. It's live music every night. It's a show. It's where you go to impress. And that type of concept really is more suited to a Miami or a Vegas.
Or Nashville, in a way. I mean, if you take a look at Nashville being a lot of conventions there, but also those streets are so packed all the time. Ironically, there's an area in Nashville where you have this area called the Gulch, right? Which is becoming a very high-end kind of restaurant places. And then you have your Broadway and Second, which is your country bars after country bars, all celebrity branded, but packed all the time. It's insane. In a very small area. Very interesting.
Right. Well, the demographics are changing. I think, you know, again, in Dubai, we had opened our locations in these kind of predominantly residential encampments. And when you start to understand that the people around you are, you know, their profile, their demographics, you know, are they young families? Do they have kids? Are they, you know, are they out multiple times a week? This type of stuff really is a major driver in your decisions of where to open.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, Joey, final words and a quote that you really live by.
Ooh. I always say this, but I think be the change you want to see is a good quote. I think... You need to be able to change every now and then, you know?
Well, I think everyone here watching this, number one, if you could subscribe and more importantly, share it to someone, you know, who would love the dining experience, but more so too, I think this was a classic, honest interview about the, you know, the busboy in a restaurant that I am aware of, Montreal, and waitering and failing concepts and the story. It's only just beginning too. Next stop is the United States of America, I'm sure. And who knows? I might be in the restaurant business after all, which, I mean, I'm into every other business. So what's a restaurant adding to for the portfolio? But thank
look,
you.
It's a business like any other business.
It is. Nope. I don't look at it as the restaurant business. I just take a look at a business. But it's a very intensive business, a very people business. You have to be really in it, and you have to, you know, you have to watch it. And I think, if something goes wrong, you really got to be there to make sure that you bring it back. Because you don't really get a second chance with the consumer.
You need to react. You need to adapt. You need to turn on a dime. You need to make those changes.
Well, like, subscribe, comment. If you're listening to a podcast, share it over. But more importantly, I would recommend you listen to more than this once, because I think you're going to realize that there's little nuggets here and there that will really create your business or any business an experience, and more importantly, a wow destination. Thank you, Joey, for being on. Great interview. Hope we'll see you on there. We'll see everybody on the next one.